So now I'll open it up. I know it's a little bit longer than I thought, obviously. Not so. I'll open it up and think about a few issues related to online learning materials, including open access and copyright and licenses and things like that, academic freedom, diverse learning styles and teaching styles, different attitudes toward technology, and the authority of people using and creating.
You speak about diversity. I come from White Bread, Kingston, so there's not as much diversity, really. You know, my two favorite words in the classroom are "it depends," and I drive my students nuts when I do that. I love it, because that's how you get them to learn. But they want to know the right answer.
You want one answer.
Yes.
They want a
Yeah.
Logical empiricist part.
Yeah, I think so. And they don't. You know, I keep saying to them, I should be the one saying, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, let's pull this in together." Instead, I'm saying, "I need to light a fire under your ass. Come on, let's go."
Yeah.
You know, that. So I love online for that reason, because of the diversity of views, and that's what I do on my website, is I show a lot of the YouTube choices that you've made as well, and say, okay, let's talk about this. But they want to know, so what's right, Danielle? I don't know, it depends. Oh, don't say that, yes. So that's what makes it so exciting, though. But when they go to work, then often they have bosses who want to have the right answer,
mm-hmm.
too. And I teach in a marketing communications program where students are building the advertising campaigns that you and I are going to look at next year, you know. And their clients want them to give them the right answer because we want to sell more soap.
I think linked into that, a departure from the use of textbooks is this concern of, you know, we just see that academic rigor is linked to the kind of the, how dense, how thick the textbook is, and so on. I think the idea of devising something in a collaborative forum is a great idea. It's just, how do you break away from students like that who say, well, no, the textbook, this represents academic rigor, and the lecture represents academic rigor, and more. That's one of the paradigms to try and break through.
To speak to that idea, having a dialogue with a textbook, I think, constructive exercise in class, so that if you foreground to your students what you disagree with in the text, why you do so, that can set up that type of conflict or tension from which learning may not grow.
I'm from John Abbott College, Seja, the one on the West Island, and a few years ago we experimented with eliminating textbooks in chemistry. And so it's very, very content-based and very rigorous in a lot of ways. And we have multi-section courses. And as a college, for the most part, we've decided on that equity is this huge issue, and that we'd have common exams. So every student registered in a particular course, if there's 12 sections, which is typical for us, every student in every course would write the same exam. So it becomes a real problematic issue in terms of exploratory or collaborative learning, because...
just teach them the exams.
Well, we have to, in a way, because what happens in one class and what's taught in one class or learned in this kind of environment is very, very different than another class. And, you know, we don't want to penalize students. So we had that experience, and so, and also we found that the particular common thick fat textbooks don't really respond to our needs. And so we were actually, 1 year, we eliminated the textbook, which made our book very upset. And they're very expensive. They're $130, and it's an enormous for one course. Anyways, whatever. But it was disastrous for our students because they didn't have the discipline to seek out the knowledge on their own. So, and we couldn't say, well, go to the textbook and this will supplement your knowledge. And, you know, and these things, this is a few years ago, sort of before Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And now the problem with Wikipedia we're finding is that is their only source of knowledge outside of the textbook. We have reinstituted textbook. We just couldn't manage. The students just weren't independent enough and motivated enough. So I'm very interested in everything you have to say, but we're in a very difficult situation.
There's a point in between, and I'm not sure what level your students are at, but I went to a very tiny liberal arts college in the U.S., Shiner College, based on the Great Book System. We used no textbooks, but what we did was we used all original sources.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 1966, my book bills were $800 a semester, which was horrendous. But this is the in-between. You might consider that as using some original text. We read Amadeo Avogadro in the original, not the original language,
right,
in translation, rather than reading some textbook writer telling you about what he said. It's a fantastic way to teach students. But
I agree. I just think it's, you know, we're always under this huge time constraint. We have 15 weeks, and you should see the content these kids have to do. It's just, I'm running for the content. I mean, I can't divert at all. I can't talk about global warming. I can't talk about globalization. I can't talk about ozone layer. I can't talk about anything. I'm going to talk about pH.
What else we had, and again, I don't know where you had the structure. We had individual final tests for our individual classes, but then you had 9 comprehensive exams across the college. So that you had the combination of, you had tests on what you learned individually in your sections, then you also had a test on the broad base of knowledge.
And my original idea, and I was thinking about that in 2002, and I never pulled it off, and I'm kind of building material for myself to eventually pull it off. And I'm thinking, okay, they all define the same things in the same way, all of those textbooks.
Yeah.
And I'm also thinking the same thing for the upper level classes I teach, that even then, you know, the articles are available in databases that are you know, openly available for the university community, but there's the open access movement for journal articles that eventually it will be repositories and such. So I actually taught 2 semesters, 2 classes in which students didn't pay a dime for, you know, the textual materials. And because it was in the electronic reserve and it counted as fair use, at least in the US, that was at Indiana University South Bend, and it worked wonderfully. I could actually add text during the semester, which was very useful because I did a collaborative syllabus. You know, I visibly asked students to vote on a few themes, but it was very surprising. Like, they chose semiotics as the most popular thing over, you know, basically linguistic variation and things like that. It was fascinating. But one thing is that I don't necessarily want students to seek out the material themselves. I want to build something that would be a kind of centralized resource, but by modules. And originally I thought just with colleagues, just, well, we all have this material, we're building it anyway, we're sharing it. I can give you my notes, of course, yeah. Well, you know, we can give them to students, sure, but the next step is to put it together, and, you know, it takes a while to build up, but once you have it, it can be as authoritative as a textbook, at the same time that it will contain multiple voices, and students actually, well, in my experience, because anthropology is all about that, that they're perfectly fine. You know, they have different versions, but still, you know, it's within a frame that works.
I think absolutely, theoretically, that's a fantastic idea. The problem is that the systems that we operate within work actively against that idea by absolutely not rewarding that as, say, a publication, that as you know, some sort of material recompense for time. Now, not that writing a textbook is your path to wealth and glory, but at the very least, it's you know, a good line on the CV. It is some sort of supplement. Whereas I personally think that it's a fantastic idea to do this type of thing as an altruistic act, but it tends to be constrained by the very system we're trying to operate within. And unless you can have a fundamental shift where, say, professors start to make a little bit more money, in order to allow them to provide their own material, right, because that is a fair time commitment, then that, I think that would be a constraint.
And a lot of people reacted exactly like that when I told them about those ideas 5 years ago, except people who were near retirement or retired or before tenure track,
okay,
including myself. I'm actually not done with my PhD. And one of my points is that we already have built some of that material. You know, we already build this material with students, including when I'm podcasting. You know, I have that. It's you know, MP3s in this case. But to convert that to, you know, not that the speech recognition systems are so good, but to actually have students transcribe. You know, there are some podcasts that are transcribed exhaustively by watchers, you know, or listeners. And this kind of thing, you know, we can work together. Students as unpaid assistants in a way, but also, you know, they're working in the process. And the part about the recognition is one that's very important for a lot of people, especially tenure track. But for a lot of other people, yeah, when I send a message to a mailing list about this specific concept, you know, everyone is free to use it. They don't have to quote me. It's just, you know, I want this idea to be around. And there's work, but the work, we do it anyway. Right?
That's what I was thinking, is you can ask people who have already gotten fame and glory for their publication,
yeah,
by having it published. And what I found is well-known names in the field, Shelby Hunt in marketing. I wanted to use a chapter from his book on marketing theory in a course that I team teach with a colleague from philosophy called Philosophical and Ethical Issues in the Mass Media. I emailed Shelby Hunt and said, I read your work in doctoral studies and I loved it. I've used it in my teaching for years. Told him about the course and said, could I use your article? He wrote it back. I said, sure, I'd be honored. I said, as a matter of fact, I have new copies. It's coming out. Please use this one. Very few people say, no, you can't. You'll have to go through the formal procedure, write by publisher, blah, blah, blah. And I just keep that email in my file as my permission to use that. It doesn't cost me any.
Sure.
I want to make a point about your chemistry class. I teach a course in consumer behavior, and a lot of us teach it quite different. And of course, we want our students to understand consumer behavior. What I do with the students is negotiate with them in the beginning and say, would you like to be at an art exhibit where I point the way, or should we go mountain climbing together? In other words, would you like to talk about Facebook and the implications of who owns the data and what you've done by clicking that particular box and so on? Does that matter to you? And then I show them something from YouTube that is, no, it's called Album of the Day. You've not seen Album of the Day? You, of all people, should see it. albumoftheday.com. And then say, is this important to you? Because if you would like to talk about this, I would love to talk about this. I think this is helpful to you. So you're going to have to do this reading on your own. I'll give you quizzes so we'll know that you're actually capturing it. But let's dedicate a minimum of an hour a week to a panel discussion, to an article, to looking at this one here, which is just fast. It's about 5-6 minutes long, but it's really interesting viewing. So Album of the Day, I recommend highly. So try something like that. I don't know your name, but
it's Murray.
Murray, I'm Danielle. Try something like that. Get them to say, I want to talk about globalization. I want to talk about global warming. Could we look at an inconvenient truth?
I think, you know, it's interesting because I think it all comes back, maybe into your talk as well, to student-centered learning also, which is a big thing. Like, here I am, I'm presenting all this material to them. It's more teacher-delivered learning rather than student-centered learning. And I think there's a lot of questions, probably at this conference too, and many education conferences, how valuable is that anyways? You know, that I just sort of spew out all these concepts and expect in an hour and a half, all these students are just going to say, oh, okay, now I know how to do this, now I know how to. It doesn't happen, right? So I think it might be much more useful in some ways, saying, okay, let's take part of the day and say, okay, we're going to cover this material. And then the other part of that time, let's talk about the implications of that material and just in general, what's going on. Let's have some real life. Let's have some authenticity to what this really means in our lives. Because unless they make that relationship, unless they think about it. I don't know if there is any connection anyway.
One of the best pieces of advice, I hired a woman who I met in a poetry meeting who does workshops on creativity. And she usually does it for groups, but I said, I'm not a group person, I'm hiring individually. And I did. I said, one of the things I'm sick and tired of is these gender issues in marketing. I said, I go and I put up these wonderful overheads, and I have these marvelous pictures I've culled from all over the place. And I stand there, and I say, well, this is a picture of this, and this is a picture of that. And I said, this is a course in gender issues in marketing. I believe in feminist pedagogy. I believe in all kinds of things. And I'm doing this stupid method of teaching. I said, I need something different. And what she taught me changed the way I do my whole teaching. She said, use your same wonderful pictures that you know capture the essence of what you're trying to get over. But she said, put it up on the overhead and say to your students, what do you see?
Yeah.
What do you hear? What do you feel? She said, I can almost guarantee you at the end of your discussion period, they will have brought out things that you would have stood and lectured. Change.
Don't forget what the root word for education is. It's to reduce, which is to draw forth, not to stuff in. And that's what we often forget. We talk about barriers. We talk about systems.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, we're drawing forth, not stuffing in. That's something, if you can think about each time you create your notes. Or
true, but
yes.
Murray needs these folks to memorize and be able to apply some of those.
I have a colleague in Vernon who, again, last year at the UBCO learning conference, it's almost a parallel discourse, saying, we can't do it. There's no way, the content's too long. This year he's doing it.
But they understand, let's make a deal. And if the deal is that they get to check out an interesting film or video or whatever and really talk about it and then understand, that's why global warming is happening. And actually, we should call it global warming because that actually sounds good. We live in the north for crying out loud. It's calling it
climate crisis.
Because change is cool too, but the crisis is like, whoa, that's serious.
I think what you're doing here with this, you know, to get back to your talk more, I think it's interesting because I think if you create this sort of online community where students help students and teachers help teachers and students.
Don't think of these four walls as being the classroom.
Use
blogging. Where
that
you
could be the, you know, that could be the boring content. I don't know, but that's where they can discuss the content. And
including their own term papers, for instance. You know, it's to me, I always ask them, when it's very good, can I use it as an example for next semester? I don't do portfolios yet for a different reason. I'm not at the same place for long enough, so it makes things very hard for me. But at the same time, you know, you have all of that, and sometimes it just needs a little bit of editing. It could be, you know, very good. It could be very useful to other students. And that is work that they do for grades, maybe, but, you know, they also do out of their own enjoyment, and they can build from that. You know, not repeat the same thing, but actually build the material part of it themselves. And colleagues, you know, if I'm doing one chapter on linguistic anthropology, I can do that fairly easily, and then it's edited by other people. It's not that much work. The recognition, I don't care, you know. The money, it doesn't take me more time. I already wrote all of that. I don't know.
And the content's all around us. It's just a matter of recording it.
Yeah, because we're not transmitting, you know, it's not the control of access to information. Information is cheap. But the knowledge behind the information that you can get behind the information is what we're trying to grow, right? So, and that is more expensive.
And Murray, I think you talked about Wikipedia and the superficial nature of it. Conference I was at a few weeks ago, there was an astrophysicist who also had the same comment. But what he did as one of the projects for his physics course was to get his students to create a Wikipedia entry based on the course content. So they improved that online encyclopedia. And it crossed that gap between theory and practicality. And it raised that level of critical thinking and understanding. All the things that we talk about theory, they actually could implement right away.
Well, we compete with Wikipedia, so why not contribute to it, right?
No, I'm not trying to dismiss it. I just see our students at this point using it as the sole reference to anything they write.
But show them the disclaimer.
It might not be. Yeah,
they have their own disclaimer. Don't use this for in about me in that section. It says, do not use Wikipedia for academic.
Well, if Stephen Colbert can get people to edit Wikipedia entries, we can get students to edit.